always do this so that these people are not, they are able to go in that I even want to be. Because we have people that nobody go to want to be. So this is the portfolio. Today we have the pleasure of having the two entities that we normally call the problem chief of the U.S. settlement in the house. Richard, can you please come and sit here? The FAA and Success Board is in the house. And Kusot is in the house. Now, they are specifically here because we had asked them to do certain things the last time they appeared in front of us. So we just want to have a sense if whatever we had asked them to do, they are on track in doing them. But before I allow the DG, I just want to note apologies that have come through to us. Honorable Baha is unable to join us. He is preparing for a debate this afternoon. We had allowed him that. Honorable Malazi will leave us at 12:30. We all know that parties are very busy, so we allow people to do their part work in between. We are left with few weeks to the election. To be precise, today we are left with 71 days. We are doing the counting in our head. We know. So he's going to leave at 12:30. He's going to KZN. Just to let him know that he's going into a province that he's not supposed to go. But I'm allowing him to go. I'll be watching you another day. We know that other members would come. The minister is going to join us probably. She has just gone to the other event of the department here in Cape Town together with the deputy minister. So as soon as that done there, they might join us. I'm sure one of them will join us, but I met with them earlier on. Honorable Sonyane from EFF, she just made an apology as well. What we are going to do, we are going to start with the Estate Agents Affairs Board, did you? In terms of presentation, they were here very early. I thought I must do this because the members must know that in all their faults, they've been here at 10 o'clock. So please, as you grill them, remembering that they were here an hour ago. They decided that they want to sit here and be calm so that by the time the committee starts, they have acclimatized. They are fine now. I can see they are very, very calm. So please, remember that. And I'm going to allow the PTG to do the opening words and introduce those that need to be introduced and then give them over. But before that, we've noted, DG, that their presentation is very long, but we hope that they will be talking to the presentation, not necessarily presenting it page by page. They know the issues that they want to stress on to the committee. We also want to know that issue that we're but we're not saying they must keep the important things. But we noted that, I don't know the second version of but the first version of the presentation was about 70 pages. Yeah. So, Gigi, over to you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable members of the committee. Let me first apologize for arriving slightly late. Shuttling between two committees, Public Works and Human Settlements. I've asked the two DDGs to take care of the land issues and property issues with Public Works. Chair, the last time we presented to the portfolio committee, the committee was not very happy at all, especially with EAAB, because EAAB is the only entity that failed to submit the annual financial statements. I must say, Chair, that since then, the organization, together with the department, have managed to resolve those issues, and those are issues that were emanating from the transition from the old entity that was managing the audit processes in the company, that the AG asked us to keep it a little bit longer because the board wanted to release that entity. But AG instructed us to keep that company slightly longer so that they can hand over the audit outcomes to the AG. It's not a problem of their own making, Chair, but I think we take full responsibility when things do not go right. And I think it is a statutory requirement to submit annual financial statements and audit outcomes to the committee. And I'm sure the chair of the entity of EAAB will touch on that matter without giving too much explanation, because when we explain ourselves, we come across as if we're giving excuses. Chair, we are very optimistic that the entity will be stabilized. I think the CEO is in place, and I'm sure the chair will introduce the CEO as well of the entity. We also indebted, highly indebted to this entity, because the processing of the property practitioner's bill, Chair, you'll recall that they had to second Mr. Ngwenya to the department to help us in the processing of the property practitioner's bill. And I want to say it's also an investment for them, because they need to make sure that that bill is processed properly. It was managed very well by Mr. Ngwenya and the team from EAAB. We're busy now with the NCOP. We've been to all the provinces, and we are very positive that that bill will be promulgated before we end this current administration. Without wasting time, Chair, I think the chairman and the CEO of the entity, the two of them, are better placed to present the state of the organization to this committee. And I guess you would want them to spend a little bit of time on the audit issues, on the financial issues, and also to tell us in no ambiguous terms as to how the vacant positions are going to be filled, because we don't want this organization to be having a number of acting people. The market is also watching very closely as to how we are going to stabilize this entity. You would have seen the comments on the property practitioner's bill about the capacity of the entity and how we can beef up certain areas in the entity to get the EAAB functional again. Thank you very much. From the side of the department, we've got DDG Mongo, who is responsible for entities oversight. I'm sure at some stage she'll be able to make some comments. We also have DDG Litsulonyana, who is the DDG responsible for corporate services in the department. And I have the CFO here with me as well, and they'll be able to comment on some of the financial and audit matters. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DJ, for that introduction and the fact that you took the sting out of us by actually confirming the fact that what they did not submit on time, there was a discussion between yourself and the entity, but they will dwell on it as they present. Let me allow the chair of the board to come in, do the introductory remarks, and present the people that he is with. And yeah, over to you, Mr. Bigo.
Thank you, Chair. And for those that I have not met, my name is Ngosinathi Biko, Chairperson of the EAAB. And good morning to you, Chair, and members of the committee. Chair, we are an extremely large board, as you may be aware, 15 members in total, of whom 39 office. So we hardly travel as a group because of the obvious financial consequences of that. However, I'm delighted to just introduce a few members who are traveling with us. The Deputy Chair, Mr. Yusuf Patel, who is here. We also have two members who are based in Cape Town who have agreed to join us, the Deputy Chair of Transformation Committee, Mr. Kumzile Makosana, behind me, the Chair of the Education Committee, Amanda Tuba. They also serve on other committees' chair, as well as the Chair of the Audit and Risk Committee, Mr. Dani Mudau, who is one of the independent members on that committee. We thought to bring a delegation with, recognizing, of course, that we have not always had the opportunity to interface with the portfolio committee. There is a contingent of executive members, and I'll leave the CEO to introduce those members when she takes over. But the chair will recall that the last time we were here, we were led by Mr. Sigaba in his capacity as acting CEO. And the chair asked us, what is your timeline to the appointment of a CEO? Well, part of the reason we are here, Chair, is to present our new CEO. We have asked our media partners to hold back the announcement until such time that we complete the internal consultation. And so following this, we'll begin to see a name and face more and more. Next to me is Ms. Mamudubi Mosala, who came through a very competitive process of highly capable persons and was an extreme top scorer from that process. The board is behind her. We have faith in her, and she has shown us over the month that she's been there what it is that is possible with that institution, translating some of our dreams into reality, and she will touch a little bit on that. It's true, Chair, that the board takes very seriously its responsibility to account to our various stakeholders, including this committee. This committee is a conduit to the public. And so we wrote with regret last year when we failed on one of the principal measures, stating that it is our responsibility, even at the worst of times, to report to this committee, and that we were eager to still come. So we are grateful that we've been granted that opportunity today. It was occasioned by principally the matter raised by the DG of transitioning from one audit entity to the AG. And we've elected to go for the AG because as a regulator, we believe that, particularly in light of the happenings around audit firms in 2017, there are many lessons to be learned, and we should not be found wanting as a regulator. The CEO will also speak to that. Chair, there are two occasions on which we interacted last. The first was the 31st of October, 2017, and when I say we, I mean the board members. And then that was here, and subsequently the committee visited us on the 29th of January at our offices in Johannesburg, 29th of January, 2018. There were three top priorities given to us by this committee. The first was to turn around the entity from what was in 2016-2017 a deficit of 56 million rand. The second was to stabilize the entity. So the first was to turn around the finances, the second was to stabilize the entity, and the third was to re-engineer and focus on transformation. And we will hear from the presentation that the group has, in fact, made that turnaround in 2017-2018 of 69 million rand, eradicated that deficit, and ended with a surplus of about 13 million rand. There are regression issues that are being attended to, and the CEO will speak to that, particularly around performance indicators, but it's one of the priorities. So on the numbers, we are on the right path, in terms of the institution. And then on the issue of stabilizing the entity, there were a series of appointments and activities that took place. The appointment of the Audit and Risk Committee in January 2018, of which Ms. Mudau is the chair. There were three, at the time, vacancies around the independent members of that committee. That committee is now fully in place. The appointment of internal auditors, which took place in March 2018, that was completed. The appointment of external auditors, and that being the Auditor General directly, that was done and completed in December. The appointment of the CEO, who sits next to me, that was done in January, and she started at the beginning of February. The appointment of senior executives, CFO, CIO, company secretary, and executive head of transformation, she will speak to, but as the committee may have seen, the CFO was already advertised in the weekend newspapers, and the overhaul of our IT system. And those were some of the things that had burdened this institution and created lethargy within the entity. And we are therefore happier that there is a smoother runway ahead of this institution, Chair, and it is headed for a good place and a good trajectory. On the issue of transformation, we also focus on the internal transformation around employment equity and supply chain, and those are ongoing. And then externally, the committee will know that the principal pillar of our transformation program focus on the One Learner and One Estate Agency program, which is really at the beginning of a broader spectrum. Before the board are currently other elements along the line, including a program to rehabilitate and regularize entities that have fallen out of the system, much along the way that perhaps SARS did with the tax issues a few years back, and a program around principalization and incubation, which we are working on to take opportunities with some of our government entities and bring them to bear as opportunities for people in our incubation program. So those last two matters are matters that are before the board, should be finalized in our next meeting. With that, Chair, you did say it's a long presentation. I will hand over to Mamadou B to then take us forward to report on the last year and development since then. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Biko. Before I hand over to the CEO, I have to comment that in all our interactions with AAB, we've never had five board members attending the portfolio committee. And I think they also feel that they have turned around. So they have come and owned this turnaround. So no. We really thought before I allow the CEO to take that podium to make that comment. I think you've done well. For them to come here to actually want to own, it means already, and congratulations on your appointment. We hope that you will do well. It's a very important entity to human settlement. It means a lot to us, so to have it stabilized is critical for the sector as a whole. So we wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. We have four members from the executive team of the EAB who are accompanying me and who will assist me with regard to making the presentation today. But we are mindful of time, so we won't take too much of your time, but we will try and deal with all the critical issues we need to deal with. Firstly, I'd like to introduce the three members from the EAB who are here. They're all executives. There's Happy, there's Jimmy, and there's Nikki. So they'll all be assisting me as we go along. Firstly, the structure of the presentation. We will be speaking to, most importantly, our performance 2017-2018, the annual report that we'll be presenting. We'll talk to issues of performance, we'll talk to issues of financial performance, But most importantly, we'll go into detail into the audit opinion and what remedial steps we put in place. We'll also talk to the turnaround strategy. When we speak to the audit opinion, we will also be talking to the turnaround strategy because there are steps that we've already put in place. So we are mindful of the fact that we have lost a lot of time since 2017, 2018, but we will obviously deal with what remedial steps we've put in place to make sure that we catch up and we deal with all the audit findings and the queries that have been raised in relation to the entity. The purpose, obviously, is to deal with our annual report, as I've already indicated, and to also deal with the financial statements of the AAB, including issues of corporate governance, which have been a serious issue that has been raised by the auditors in relation to our performance. Now, the performance, going straight into the issue of the annual performance for 2017-2018, as has already been indicated, that was a very difficult time for the Estate Agency Affairs Board, but I believe that we've gone beyond that, and we will demonstrate towards the end of this presentation as to what concrete steps we put in place to make sure that we do not have a repeat of what happened in 2017-2018. Because if you look at that summary of our performance, you will see that we had 34 indicators. We only performed in terms of 15 indicators, and there were 19 non-performance issues. So we will make sure that we deal with the remedial steps that we put in place, because you'll see that we performed in less than 50% of what was expected of us in terms of the output. Now, the first division that we will deal with is the registries division, because I'm sure you all know that for an estate agent to actually conduct any business, they need a Fidelity Fund Certificate, and a Fidelity Fund Certificate has a 12-month lifespan, which is a 12-month calendar year, which would be from January to December. Now, this is the most critical division for us because that is where we obviously accredit entities to actually deal with the public under the auspices of being estate agents. Specifically, in this section, we're going to deal with new applications and renewals, and we'll look at specifically three categories of estate agents. These are your principal agents, your full status agents, which are your fully qualified agents, and we'll also deal with interim agents. I think it's just important to also emphasize that since the 1st of July 2016, agents are allowed, or it is permissible for agents to actually apply electronically. So they go to the MyEAB website, and then obviously would undertake three simple steps in order to be registered, and then they would get a Fidelity Fund Certificate after meeting all the compliance requirements. Now, as we stand, in terms of the 2017-2018 financial year, you will see that with regards to the renewals, there is a bit of a typo with regards to the slide. You will see that we indicated that the total issued EAB certificate is 43,000. That's not quite, not EAB certificates, the Fidelity Fund certificates. We indicated there that it's 43,000. That is a typographical error, because if you look at the annual report, it's supposed to be 49,645 in total, and that was an increase from a number of 48,489, which would mean it was a 2.3% increase from the previous year. We are obviously looking at interventions to make sure that that there is better growth and more interest within the industry, and we will talk to how we intend on increasing those figures. Now, if you look at the specific graph, it also speaks to the different categories. It talks to firms, it talks to interns that have been registered. You will see that there's a slight omission. I think this came out during the editing. The 314 and the 207 relates to attorney employees registration. Then we deal with the firms, then we deal with the internships, and then we deal with non-executive directors, and we deal with the principals. So those are the figures that speak to what was achieved within that financial year. The gender split in relation to those specific figures, you will see that, unfortunately, there's still a strong dominance from the two financial years. There's still a very strong dominance of white males. You'll see at the end, unfortunately, the bottom part has come out. On the extreme right-hand side, it reflects white males, and then followed by white females. And when you compare that to the participation of African females, you see that there is a vast difference between the two. And that means that we obviously need to actually look into that closely. Because if you do the math, you'll actually see that with regard to black females, the number increase was only 26 black females that were included, or that joined the estate agency arena from a principal's point of view. even with the black males, it's even lower. It's 21 black males that became principals. Whereas if you compare that to white males and white females, with regard to white males, the increase was 520 principals that were included in the industry, and the white females was 301. So clearly there needs to be some work that needs to be done in order to make sure that there's increased participation by black females and black males within this industry, especially from a principalization point of view. But when I speak to issues around transformation, I will deal specifically with what interventions we want to put in place. Now, the next slide talks to the provincial breakdown with regard to the registration of principals and the renewals of principals of their Fidelity Fund certificates. You will see that Gauteng is the lead with regard to that. You will see that there's 510 the number has increased between 2017 and 2018 by the inclusion of 510 new principals within the Gauteng area. And if you consider that to the Northern Cape, which is the lowest, if you look at the Northern Cape, it is only 9 that have been included in that financial year, which is a cause for worry. And obviously, it does indicate a need to stimulate participation of estate agents within that area. The next category relates to the full status agent, which is your non-principal agent. You will see that between 2017 and 2018, the highest registration still was among white females, as opposed to if you compare them with the black females. You'll see that with regard to the white females, more than 500 have actually registered. It's unfortunate that the slide doesn't show. There's a little graph that we have on the slide that does the comparison. The figures that you are seeing on the screen are the 2018 figures. We couldn't fit both 2018 and 2017, but the figures are available in the hard copy annual report, and it's also available on the side of the screen should you require that information. But if you do the math, you'll see that there is an increase of white females with regards to there's a higher number of white females that are registered as non-principal estate agents. And when you compare that to the black females, who are only 46, who increased only by 46 in number compared to 500, it is another cause for concern and requires some immediate intervention. But the lowest performing group out of all of them was the colored females, whereby you find that it's only 15 that have received Fidelity Fund certificates as non-principal registered estate agents. When you look on the racial breakdown on the full status, which is your fully accredited estate agents, again you see that it is the white group, the racial group that actually has the highest number. You will see that the number grew by 1,032, and the lowest group, the racial group that grew by the lowest number is the colored racial group, which grew only by 21. So those are the issues that need to be clearly identified and dealt with from a transformation point of view. And if you look at the next slide that deals with the provincial breakdown, you'll see again Gauteng comes out top, followed by the Western Cape, and then the lowest performing province with regard to the full status growth is the Limpopo province. The next category is in relation to intern estate agents, the registration and the renewals. You'll see from the graphs that are presented above that, again, you have white females being the ones that are the largest intake in terms of interns that are taken into the estate agency industry, followed by white males, and the lowest performing group under this category of interns is the Indian females. And I think with regard to this group, the EAB, it's incumbent on us as the EAB to make sure that those figures start to change in their reflection, because this is the entry point whereby the One Learner program actually can ensure that we increase the numbers, and also from the public awareness work that we expected to do from a transformation point of view, we'll need to increase the numbers and make sure that it is more reflective of the demographics of this country. Because currently, as things stand, it seems that there's still a great dominance by white females within this particular sector, and we would want to see that there's increased growth of black interns or intakes within this particular segment of the estate agency industry. The next slide speaks to the breakdown of, according to racial terms. The previous slide spoke to gender and to race. The next slide just speaks to the racial background, a breakdown, and you'll see that it still speaks to what exactly the issues that I was raising, that there is a dominance of interns from the white racial group as opposed to the African racial group. Now, when you break it down per province, even in the context of interns, you will see that there is a higher dominance within the Gauteng area, and you will see that Gauteng, the figures are as high as 10,000, whereas if you compare it to the next province after Gauteng, you will see that Western Cape follows by almost half of what is actually taking place in relation to Gauteng. And the lowest performer is the Northern Cape in relation to intern estate agents. And I think from these statistics, it becomes quite clear that the heart of economic activity within the estate agency space or the property space is within the context of Gauteng. So there is a need to obviously do a proper analysis to ascertain exactly in the context of Gauteng if it is not reflective of people from the different provinces. But we will obviously be talking to this issue in the context of transformation and the one moment program. Before I hand over to my colleague with regards to, so that he can deal with other issues in relation to education and training, I just would like to report to this committee that today, as at the 15th of January, 2019, we have been able to clear all the Fidelity Fund certificate backlog, meaning that all new applications and new amendments, Fidelity Fund certificates have now been issued, and we've also issued all the renewal Fidelity Fund certificates, which would mean in total, as I sit here in the past month that I've been with the EAB, we've been able to produce 27,000 Fidelity Fund certificates. And we think this is quite important because Fidelity Fund certificates is the tool by which estate agents are able to perform their functions in the industry. And as such, the EAB is now on track. And now we are dealing with the statutorily prescribed or the turnaround times that we have undertaken in terms of our strategic document and our APP, in that now renewals are done within the 5-day turnaround time and new applications and amendments are done within the 21-day turnaround time. So we are now up to date with regard to Fidelity Fund certificates, and there is no backlog with regard to that. On that note, I'll hand over to my colleague to deal with the education and training, and then I'll come back to deal with the issues around the audit findings and the turnaround strategy. Thank you.
As the CEO alluded, that I'll be dealing with education and training part of the annual report, and it's as you know, it's one of the major regulatory pillars of the State Agency Affairs Board and the Act, and we obviously deal with the professionalization and transformation of the state agency sector. The program that are undertaken are education and training intervention for agents. We're also a professional body within the sector, according to some accreditation. Just to mention also that there was an assessment done in the 2018 financial year, and SACA has now given us the go-ahead to continue with our professional status. We also conduct PD exams for qualified state agents. Also, before the intern becomes a state agent, he has to complete the PD4, and before the non-principal agent becomes a principal, he has to complete PD5. We also conduct continuous professional development as well, and that was started back in the 2015 financial year. We just completed our first 3-year cycle, And we'll talk more about the outcome of that. We also assess application for exemptions. There are certain exemptions granted for qualifying state agents. And our plan is always to establish a knowledge center and research unit, which we are still in the process of doing. So if we look at the slide, which is compliance with prescribed internal logbook submission, this process was started back in 2016, in the sense that we had to ensure that we have effective training of our interns. Therefore, we ensure that the state agency they work for and the intern provide us with an intern logbook for their day-to-day work, so that our state, the intern and state agents are not just making coffee for the firm, but actually there's evidence of them being trained. As you can see, if you compare 2017 to 18, that's increasing, and so hopefully that will increase. And the nice thing is that 99% or more, if it's less, are actually compliant or submit compliant internal logbooks. This slide is just compliant with prescribed qualification. We as a state agent prescribe the education and training, but the services CESA actually issues the fidelity fund certificate. So with this slide, it's just showing what the numbers that we're getting out of services CESA, people who actually have qualifications for AQF 4 and AQF 5. So we cannot explain the decrease from 6,000 in 2017, 2018. I think that's an internal matter within services CETA to actually issue out certificates. But we are obviously working close with services CETA to ensure that they issue out more certificates. In terms of professional designation exam, as I said, that we are the one who set the PD4 exam and the PD5. And what we can see is that there's a growing number of candidates who are actually sitting for the exam, which means more state agents with relevant qualifications. This just shows us the analysis of the pass rate of those PD exams. And as you can see, it's basically about 75% of the candidates who sit for PDE actually pass. And then statutory exemption, as I mentioned before, this is for state agents who held a Fidelity Fund certificate before 2008 for a period of 5 years, who therefore becomes exempted from writing the PDE. So those are the numbers, and they are slightly increasing, but as we go on further in the years, you'll find that that will actually decrease because there'll be less people holding certificates before 2008. Continued professional development. As I said, we've just completed the first cycle, normally a 3-year cycle from 2015 to 2017, and state agents are supposed to achieve 45 points in terms of our verification process. And in 2000, or the first cycle, we had 9,468 state agents completed and qualified, compared to about 15,000. We do have those, if you look under no CPD points acquired, that didn't attempt the CPD. We have put stringent measures in place by blocking their certificates or blocking from them receiving a Fidelity Fund certificate until they have completed the process. So we had an application of about 4,000 who come forward to admit to the guilt, and now they actually are completing this process. And then just in terms of race, what we find that from the black, Asian, colored perspective, there are less people who are compliant and non-compliant, but we have put interventions in place in terms of Section 27, I think, which one of my colleagues will be presenting on, that those PDIs can come in and apply for a special concession. In other words, they may not have to pay the fee, the CPD, or we can support them in whatever way we can, so that we can get those numbers up in terms of compliance candidates. Okay, I'll hand over to my colleague to legal compliance.
Quickly, you seem to be wanting to take the giant time of the sort. Remember, there are two entities that must present. You are not the only one. It's not our fault that you didn't present last time we gave you the opportunity. So please, don't make it our problem. quickly, Jimmy.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, our colleagues from CISO, the DG. Thank you very much. Chair, without any waste of time, I'm just going to talk to what we do as part of enforcement and compliance. Our primary mandate is to promote the standard of conduct for state agents, obviously in the best interest of members of the public. And our secondary mandate as a supervisory body in terms of the FIC Act is to make sure that members of the industry comply with the provisions of the FIC Act as well. So, Chair, in terms of the statistics, or rather the complaints that we received in this financial year, we have received about 8,251, and we have finalized almost 7,000 out of the 8,000 that we have received. We finalized 7,000 of those, and the pending matters, which are the matters where, for instance, Chair, you find that there's some outstanding information that we still expect from the complainant. This is the number of those outstanding complaints. In terms of the disciplinary hearings, if you look at the stats year on year, in 2018, we received 206 matters, and then we were able to secure 100 convictions, and then there has been 31 acquittals. And so if you compare this to the 2017, end of 2017 financial year, there has been a slight decrease in the number of complaints that we have received. Now, in regard to inspections, we had intended to do a total number of 100 inspections in the financial year in question. And our intention was to do at least 25 inspections per quarter. Now, if you look at quarter one, Chair, there hasn't been any inspections. Reasons being, since the declaration of unconstitutionality of Section 32 of the State Agency Affairs Act, we couldn't conduct inspections in terms of our act. Therefore, we have sorted to doing online assessment. Now, in the first quarter, we were concentrating on processing the online assessment. However, Chair, if you look at the end of this financial year, we were able to exceed the target of 100 inspections. Therefore, we were able to do over what we had targeted for. And these are the inspections in terms of the provinces. Now, if you add all these figures together, Chair, they come down to 108, a total of 108 inspections done in this financial year. Now, in regard to the audit compliance, it is a requirement in terms of our Act that each and every real estate entity must submit their audit report within 4 months after the end of their financial year. So failure to do so on time would lead to a disqualification of that particular entity. If you look at the stats year on year, Chair, we were able to achieve, or rather, 88% of the reports submitted were done within the prescribed time. Only 12 were out of time, and obviously that attracted some disciplinary measures against those that submitted late. Now, we have, during this financial year, Chair, a total number of 7,000 audit reports were received, and this comprised of 41 for the 2018 financial year. Chair, you'll recall that if you look at the two columns, the first column speaks to the financial year end of the organization, and the second column speaks to the year end, financial year end of the entities. The majority of the entities that we have, their financial year end is end of June, or rather 28th of February, meaning the report must be in by the end of June. Now, the 41 that you see here, Chair, these are the ones that for those firms whose financial year end was September, and therefore they had to submit by the end of January, February of the following year. That explains the two columns. Now, the most important enhancement to the portal that we have, that's in place, is that it enables auditors of these entities to submit their audit report on behalf of their clients. Therefore, as an auditor, you have to register online, create a username and password, and submit that. Now, the good thing about this, Chair, is that the moment an audit report gets to be uploaded by an auditor, it triggers a letter that goes to the estate agent to inform that your report has been submitted. And a copy of that letter, obviously, would go to the auditor. Now, there are various transgressions that would be picked up by, we will pick up internally, which will be dealt with as far as the disciplinary processes are concerned. And the contraventions range from, you know, failure to comply with the regulations relating to the trust account, the FIC registration, and the cash transaction report in terms of the FIC Act. Now, most of the state agencies continue to receive unqualified audit opinion on their annual financial report, which is an indication of increased compliance with Section 29. I must say, Chair, that due to the measures that we have put in place, we were able to ensure that you know, members of the industry start to comply in their numbers. Hence, you see the large number of audit reports that get to be submitted on time. And that is that talks to the audit compliance. Now, Chen, as far as the claims are concerned, as one of our core mandates is to protect members of the public, make sure that where members of the public have suffered pecuniary loss due to failure on the part of an estate agent, for instance, to comply with the regulations in terms of the opening and keeping of trust accounts, or where they have suffered pecuniary loss due to theft on the part of an estate agent, the Fidelity Fund is able to reinvest those people, and there are stringent measures in place to make sure that, you know, fraudulent... Thank you, sir.
We know that you are a lawyer, Chini.
Thank you,
but can you quickly summarize,
okay,
because the presentation must be finished by 12. Everything, including the CEO coming back.
I'll try my level best, Chair. Now, this talks to the new claims that we have received. As you can see, Chair, the number of claims that we received has gone down quite substantially in the past 5 years. This is due to the consumer awareness programs that we have put in place. Now members of the public are much more wiser when dealing with estate agents. Now, the columns before you, Chair, talks to the claims that get to be approved by the board and those that get to be approved by the executive committee claims, rather the executive claims committee. Chair, how it works is that up to the claims up to 100,000, we have been delegated by the board to deal with those claims. These are small claims that we deal with, and then anything above 100,000 we refer that to the board. Chair, I've already spoken about Section 27 applications. This is where an estate agent has been disqualified due to failure to comply with the regulations. Now, there are measures in place where someone has been disqualified to approach the board on application and convince the board, you know, that the interest of justice require that they be issued with their identified certificate. And as a result of that, we're able to relicense those that have been disqualified. These are the number of applications that we have received. For instance, in 2018, we received a total number of 14 applications, and then we finalized that number. Chair, this one talks to you know, the applications by persons disqualified in terms of the for late submission, and these are the figures that we dealt with. And that brings to the end my presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and all the members. I'll try to be as quick as possible. I'll take you through the slide that speaks about the financial position of the organization. As the Chair has already indicated, the improvements compared to 2017, the slide indicates that there has been some improvement with the net assets of the organization. The second slide talks about the financial performance of the organization. In 2017, the organization made a loss of 52 mil, and in 2018, there's been some improvement of 13 million profits from a loss. The financial position has increased during the 2017-18 financial year, mainly due to the 5% increase in the investment of the Fidelity Fund as compared to prior. And then the second reason for the increase in the net assets is as a result of a profit in both entities, EAB and the EAFF. And the reason why we had a profit of 13 mil in our financial performance is as a result of the decrease in our operating expenses and employee-related costs. Our auditor, Tina, reflect that in terms of the Independent Regulatory Board of Auditors, as indicated in the Government Gazette on the 4th of December 2015, we report that Ngubani has been the auditor for Asset Agency Affairs Board and for the past 5 years. And going forward, we will be audited by Auditor General. The audit opinion that we received from the Ngubani indicated that we actually have 6 qualified audit opinions, 2 around revenue because of our FFD and our CPD, 3 the trade and other payables as a result of our unallocated fund, 4 commitment and lease comparable amount, employee costs, receivables from exchange transaction. They also emphasis of the matter which relates to the conversion of the employees from the defined benefit plan to the defined contribution plan, acting position of the senior official, resignation of risk and audit committee members, and responsibility of the accounting authority for the financial statement. I will hand over to the CEO to take you through to a turnaround strategy around the audit finding that we have received. Thank you.
I'm being nice to you because you knew.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. I won't take too much of your time. Just to talk to where we're going to from here. I think the slide is decided. Okay, from a financial point of view, We have noted that a lot of the audit findings relate to the finance department, and we have capacitated the finance department quite extensively. We've appointed 10 temps, we've appointed a financial accountant, and we have a financial consultant that's also there to actually assist us with making sure that all our financial statements are balanced this time and that they meet the requirements of RAP. We also have, in relation to finance, also are in the process of making sure that we put all systems in place with regard to issues of allocation so that we have a proper asset register and there's also a proper Excel system that we're going to be using, a proper system from SEP that we'll be using to make sure that we deal with all allocations and that they're properly recorded in advance. We've moved from a cash basis to an accrual basis as has been recommended by the auditors, and that is all in place and it's fully functional. From a human resource point of view, we're in the process of making sure our performance management system is the indicators are properly aligned to our strategic plan and our APP, so we're in the process of doing that. With regard to the issue of pension, the conversion, we have now received the final figure from Alexander Forbes, and we're in the process of making sure that we make a recommendation to the board with regard to finalization and final payout. With regard to filling of critical posts, as the chairperson has already said, we are in the process of undertaking that, and we expect all critical posts to be filled by June 2019. The chair spoke to the issue of the appointment of a CFO. I think it's also important to indicate that the audit findings found that our ITC system was quite wanting, so we'll be looking towards appointing a chief information officer. But also in relation to issues of transformation, you did note when I spoke earlier that the sector is still highly untransformed and we need to have a clear strategy with regard to transformation, and we will be appointing an executive in transformation to deal with those issues. With regard to the Fidelity Fund certificates, that is an issue that was raised in the audit finding as well. We, as I've already indicated, we are now up to date. We worked on this tirelessly from the 1st of February to up until last week to make sure that we come up to date with the Fidelity Fund certificates. So all new applications, all renewals, and all amendments have been processed through the system, and where Fidelity Fund certificates should be issued, it has been issued. From an education and training point of view, the audit finding was that the indicators that have been put with regard to our APP they're not smart compliant. We are in the process of making sure that our indicators going forward in relation to our whole APP are smart compliant, and we will be presenting to the department on Thursday with regard to our APP, and we will be undertaking the exercise of ensuring that they are smart compliant. With regard to transformation, this is a key issue, and I believe that we have spoken to what we intend to do with the One Learner program. I believe there were undertakings that were made previously to this committee that would get 2,000 interns into the One Learner program. That is still on track. We still have one more month within the year in which to finalize that. To date, we have 390 that have been appointed, but we do believe that the balance of 1,610 will still be filled before the end of March, and we are on overdrive to make sure that we meet those requirements. So the turnaround strategy really will have the five critical pillars, which is finance, human resource, the ICT system, issues of transformation, and the Fidelity Fund certificate. And I believe, Chair, I've already spoken to what initiatives we have in place to make sure that we realize our turnaround strategy in relation to those five specific areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO. Not bad for a CEO that is 1 month old. Mm-hmm. You're not doing so badly at all. Let's hope you will keep that lemon down. Honorable members, I am not going to allow the reservation to be discussed now. I'm taking the next reservation report, and then we'll discuss both of them, because remember, the challenges we're all not. So we need them to tell us their turnaround strategy. You will remember that CISOS had an adverse outcome, and we asked them to go back and do a turnaround plan. And if I remember well, the same presenters are the same that were here last, that were very miserable. I hope you will smile this time around. It's not going to be that bad. We are in a good mood. We are left with 2 weeks before we finish Parliament. So we're not going to be roasting anyone, but we just want to understand if the work is being done. That's all. So take your time, relax, take a deep breath, and do that. All right. Yes, Mr. Abulu. But we are going to allow the work that is being done, the DJ to come in, do the necessary, and then we get the presentation. DJ?
Thank you, Chair. I'm glad to hear that this time around the Chair is not wielding an axe. Without wasting time, Chair, I think it's important to acknowledge the presence of the Chairman of the Board. He is here with us and he's going to introduce the team. There isn't much to say about CISOs. Yes, Chair. The EAAB came to present to you in the second quarter, and you were worried about some of the investigations, and you were concerned about. Sorry, CISOs, not EAAB. CISOs came to present to you, EAAB didn't present to you. The board, there's a new board in place, Chair. I must say that the CISOs is not under administration. There's a board in place, a fully functioning board. There's acting Chief Ombuds who is going to make the presentation. The investigations that we started, we will reflect on them. We've concluded both investigations by the entity, by CISOs, and the investigation by the department. We'll reflect on both investigations. Without wasting time, Chair, I think it's only proper to ask the chairman of CISOs to do the introduction and introduce the presentation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Chair, good to see you and welcome. It's good to know that at least CISOs have got a fully fledged board. I won't tell them where do we know each other in case they have an interest, but I will just give it to you to do your
thing. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, PG, members of the committee, colleagues from EAB. It gives us great pleasure to present to you issues related to CISOs today on behalf of the brand new board. We've been asked to focus on the two things, but I just want to introduce the two colleagues that I'm with. I'm with the acting Chief Ombuds, Nibuo Rabuli, and I've got next to me Mawande Jadebe, he's the acting manager strategic planning. My name is Mutobi Jamzache, and I'm happy to say I'm the chairperson of the CISOs board. We've been asked to focus on progress made in addressing both the challenges relating to the turnaround strategy as well as the corporate challenges that are there. After my brief introduction, I'll hand over to the Chief Ombud to actually take us through what the mitigation factors we've had with regard to the Auditor General's report. The new board started in January, and it was inaugurated by the minister on the 25th of January. And she gave us some marching orders, and she told us she's concerned that the credibility of our organization needs some improvement. And she told us that we are actually joining the bus when there is an investigation already that's going on, and that we should run with the findings of that investigation. And on resuming the task, we found that we have a critical shortage of the CFO. And these come from the fact that both the CF, Chief Ombuds and the CFO are on suspension as we speak. So the board itself has already started operating. We've already had two board meetings already, and we've already appointed the committee, board committee, to look at the different aspects of the business. Additionally, we've done the two things that were left unfinished by the previous board, in alongside with also adopting our own work plan for the current year. So in other words, the emphasis was made for management to follow due processes and to report on government structure. Moving forward, we've done the APPs and strategic plan, and we've sent them off. This really demonstrates the commitment that this board has. And with regard to the investigation, we had appointed the lawyer KHL, and right now we are busy with the disciplinary hearing, which is going to be happening soon. The charges have been formulated, and on top of that, the lawyers are also pursuing any criminality as well as how to trace the 80 million rand that have been invested incorrectly in the previous year. My pleasure to give over to the acting chief. Thank you.
Before the chief ombud, acting chief ombud comes in, I hear the chair say tracing. Is it traceable? There's hope that it will come back. Is that hope?
Okay.
Thank you so much. Acting chief ombud. That's the good news.
Okay. Thank you, chair. Thank you, members. Morning, colleagues. Money is going to be short. In terms of the approach, we look at what is this was doing, what were the governance challenges, how did you manage to address them, and the turnaround strategies, the vacancies issues that we had, how we're going to deal with that, the audit action plan, and then the conclusion and the recommendation. I'll not go into details in terms of the papers why we are here. This was where a Schedule 3A public entity, we report to the Minister of Human Settlements. In terms of our mandate, we are there to ensure that there is governance within community scheme, and by providing education and training, and also ensuring that the sectional charges scheme governance documentation are properly quality assured. Because with that, then there will be governance within community scheme. In terms of governance challenges, as you are aware, there was an investigation that was conducted by the attorneys. They came up with some of the issues that they picked up, that board members were involved in managerial and operational issues. And in terms of dealing with that issue is that allow employees to report incidents where they have been pressured to do things that are wrong, and that any interference is properly reported and dealt with. The other issue related to the fact that board members who were sitting within the Audit and Risk Committee were also sitting in FinCom. So they recommended that there mustn't be any board member who is sitting in Audit and Risk who then sits in other subcommittees of the board. What I can report to is, in terms of the establishment of the current subcommittees of the board, we have taken that into consideration to ensure that there is no that independence between the committees, more especially the audit and risk, to ensure that it remains independent. And obviously we are considering the provision of Section 12 of the CISOS Act, which allows CISOS to appoint specialists into his board. And one of the recommendations was that we need to reduce the number of subcommittee members. We had a challenge in terms of, in the FinCom, within the previous board, we had almost all the members of the board who were sitting there, except the chairperson, which then meant when the matter goes to the board, that discussion then becomes a foregone conclusion. So we've reduced the number to ensure that other members come in independently to review and check whatever has been done by the other subcommittees. The other issues that were investigated related to the investment of the funds, contrary to the PMA treasury regulations and the policy of the board. The recommendations that we've already implemented is that the disciplinary charges against the two suspended executives who are already on the advanced stage in terms of that the charges are already completed, now we're in the process of saying the lodging of criminal charges with the South African Police Service, the affidavit has been completed. I'll be meeting the attorneys on Thursday so that we proceed and do the necessary issues that need to be dealt with. The report has already been served with the Prudential Authority and the FSB, and we'll also be approaching the SIU in terms of investigating some of the issues that were raised. So this will require a proclamation by the President. And then there is a court application that has been mentioned by the Chair to say we have already filed a court application with the High Court in Johannesburg to retrieve the 80 million that was deposited. What was picked up when the investigation was conducted was that the money from CISOS, instead of it being deposited into the VBS bank, it was deposited into an FNB account held in favor of VBS. In terms of the law, it means that money is not the VBS money, so CISOS can follow it up and retrieve it from whoever has that money. The court application will just have to go through its own normal process, and we are hoping that we will be able to retrieve the money. There are court cases supporting our application, so we are positive in this regard. The governance structure, I will not deal with this one, in terms of the board being appointed and implementing the recommendation. The governance structure, we only have three vacancies within the executive level. The 11 managerial positions that are vacant, we are sitting at a vacancy rate of 59%. This is not all doom and gloom. We have a plan in terms of ensuring that all positions are filled. The board has already approved. I think it was in their first sitting of the board meeting where they approved that we can proceed and fill in the 18 positions that were already advertised. So by end of March, all those 18 positions will be advertised. Majority of them are within the core business, and one of the issues that we need to do is to make sure that we capacitate our finance division, which in terms of capacity we need some assistance. And I think we thank the minister in terms of her allowing or seconding the DHS CFO to come and assist us in the meantime until we are able to finalize the process of the disciplinary action against the CFO. And if there are any issues, then maybe we can be able to either advertise or recruit more capacity. In terms of the department assisting us with some of the position, I'll leave that to the DG or the CFO to expand on. In terms of the audit finding, as you remember, we came here to report that we were issued with an adverse opinion. This resulted from the fact that we don't have a system that records or reconciles all transactions relating to payment of levies. One of the other issues relates to the fact that completeness of revenue, where the AG is saying you are not collecting levies from all schemes that are there in South Africa. Another issue is an irregular expenditure in the amount of 26 million. This one was occasioned by the impairment of the VBS loss, because what happened is once they impaired it, then it became an expense which then caused our irregular expenditure to go up. And obviously the issue of the material impairment of the 81 million that was invested. In terms of the mitigation, what we've done is we've already developed a plan which is currently in place to make sure that the issue of the submission of the annual financial statement, we do it, the risk compliant, and we submit it on time. In terms of completeness of revenue, where they are saying you are not collecting from all schemes that are there in South Africa. As you know, CISOS is still young. We're still registering all the schemes that are there in South Africa. To support this initiative, what we've done, we've already procured information from the DIS office. DIS office registers all the sectional title schemes. So we have all the information in terms of all the sectional title schemes in South Africa. We are using that information to send out notices to all the schemes that are non-compliant. We are hoping that by 31 March, we will at least send notices to 60% of the schemes that are on the database. This is an ongoing project. As you know, schemes get registered on a daily basis, so it's something that will be following on an ongoing basis. In terms of other schemes like the HOAs, we are in engagement with SARS to assist us with that information. There is a draft implementation protocol that is in place that once signed, the Minister of Finance will publish a proclamation in the Gazette allowing us or allowing SARS to give us that information. If you know any information from SARS, there's some sensitivity issues. Then another issue is that we are recruiting currently the personnel within finance to assist with the manual reconciliation of all the payments done pending the procurement of the revenue management system. That system will be procured in the 1920 procurement financial year, and is one of the projects that we have prioritized, but by the beginning of the financial year, we need to have started maybe issuing all the procurement processes. One of the other issues is that could reduce the, or can mitigate that is we apply to Treasury that our revenue be on a cash basis and not accrual. Obviously, they are not going to allow us to stay on cash basis forever. What we just need to show is that we are going to make sure that almost majority of the schemes are on our books, because if we give them that comfort that we're doing something, then they will allow us to go on accrual basis. Then once we have our systems in terms of all schemes being registered, then we can move back into the accrual basis. In terms of the cash and cash equivalent, fact that there was an opening of a bank account without proper approval from the National Treasury, this relates to the investment that was done. What we are doing, we are vigorous in terms of ensuring that the compliance with the National Treasury is being adhered to. And with regard to the non-compliance, there is consequence management with regard to the affected executive. The investment of the surplus fund, what we are doing is we are amending our investment policy to make sure that it is compliant to the Treasury regulation. And one of the issues is that for all future investment, if that has to happen, obviously there needs to have been a surplus that has been declared by the Auditor General. Then we need to approach National Treasury through the department to make sure that they approve that we either invest in the CBD or any other commercial bank that they might say it is deemed necessary for us to invest in. In terms of the budget, one of the challenges we used to have within CISO is that there was no regular reporting in terms of the financials. If you know that at ACCO level, that's where some of us, the assurance gets given, because managers are sitting there. So if there are any discrepancies in terms of the expenditures and the actuals, those are the issues that get picked up quickly and rectified. One of the challenges we had previously is this was not happening. We have intensified it. In fact, we started getting the better report around October. So every month there is that monthly reporting from finance in terms of the financial position, the expenditure, and the investment of the surplus fund is the same issue. We need to have our policies in place. It needs to be approved by National Treasury, and it needs to be compliant, and any investment must be aligned to that. The preferential point calculated incorrectly. Currently, what we are doing both. In terms of, it will be a system-generated point system, and we'll do manual calculation just to compare to make sure that there's no error. However, this will obviously fall away once we have procured the enterprise resource planning system, which is currently in progress. Our audit strategy is not only hinged on that. It normally focuses on the fact that for any strategy to be successful, you need to ensure that you capacitate the human resource and the skills within CISOP. You need to make sure that when you recruit employees within CISOP, they have the necessary experience and knowledge to deal with any issues that come. We have the chief audit executive who has been employed. They will assist us in ensuring that internal audit functions get carried out, because as you know, if internal audit comes in and audit before the AG comes, things come get corrected and measures get implemented before anything gets to get out of hand. So we are hoping that those people who have been recruited will assist CISOs in ensuring that any issues are dealt with before they get out of hand. We have two senior accountants who are in and two financial administrators. This also assists with the segregation of power issues that was within the finance division. And obviously there were additional control measures that were put in place, the fact that we need to be procuring the ERP ensuring that all schemes are on the same database, that we ensure that all the reconciliation is done timely. In conclusion, Chair, is that when we look at the turnaround strategy, we need to focus on it holistically, looking at what are the issues that we need to strengthen within the organization, the governance issues, the compliance and risk management. We have prioritized that. And that capacitation, getting the people with necessary skills, and the procurement of the key core system. We are talking the revenue management system and the case management system. And obviously, ensuring that we implement any recommendation emanating from the GT report and the report that was done by the resource board, which is the KHL report. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mabuli. The two reports have been presented, honorable members. There is obviously a glimmer of hope on both of them. EAP has got a CEO in place. CISOS has got a board in place. So from last year to now, at least you can see that there is some slight improvement. But let me allow honorable members to make comments and questions, and then we can take it from there. You know that the CEO of the is only 1 month old. Now, don't keep you can ask me to. And let me start with Honorable Volmaran there, and follow with Honorable Malazi, follow with Honorable Tole, Honorable Farai, and Honorable Ngadume. In that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. I welcome both the the presentations, and both of them have got a positive note to it, which sort of paralyzes the person when you want to hammer on it. But it gives solace to us that there is a board. At CISOS, we've got a CEO at EAB. But let me start with the EAB and then just few comments on the intent SSC slide, that on slide 13, and it's just a comment, but which we all know that given those steps, the numbers that we see that it is still highly with those numbers, predominantly white. And as a strategy, what is EAB going to be doing to try to balance, if not pick up the numbers? I say that in conjunction with another question that says, there's a backlog with your learner program, which you are trying to recover in the month that is left. And the number there is too high. If given all the other months and left with 1 month, how are we going to make it up, the strategy around that part? We went around as a portfolio committee when we are dealing with the bill. And most of the problems that were coming out were about the renewal, the backlog with the outstanding SSEs, and I think it's a great achievement for the board and the administration up to so far to have cleared that, because it had the unintended effect of not bringing everybody on board. And everybody across the land was complaining around that part that makes them not operational. And I think that part of clearing the backlog is a point in the right direction. With CISOS, the major parties articulated in their turnaround strategy as well and what they are going to do, but it shows that across all the points that were covered, the systems are actually the problem. We cannot reconcile, we cannot do a number of things because of our system, the reporting, the monthly reporting and so on, and it gives also confidence that it will be done. However, filling the 18 positions at 31st March, I see in the presentation there's a lot of 31st March. I don't know if it's by them knowing that you won't be here from the 20th onwards.
So you think they know that we won't be here, but Parliament has been extended by 2 months. They don't know that. We'll be here.
We'll be off, so we can summon them again. So that was just to check what we have in mind in as far as filling those 18 positions and to the practical extension.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mana. Honorable Mana.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with the EAAB and start by congratulating the new CEA for the job. Chair, I'm concerned about what the picture shows in terms of transformation, despite the interventions that are put in place. Because if you look at that picture in terms of the interns, which is what represents the future of the industry, you'll see that what it does is to reproduce the status quo. And I'm very curious to establish how the EAAB is going to counter this, because the initial purpose to even have a transformation strategy was such that we don't perpetuate the status quo. And in spite of that intervention, what you're seeing is that the new entrance into the market in the form of the interns, which represent the future of the industry, will continue to reflect the demographics currently and probably for the next 10 years. Because if you look at those statistics, it's almost triple the number of white estate agents in the form of interns that are entering the industry. And when you look at where the intervention of transformation is supposed to be, we're never going to catch up. Like, mathematically, it could even take more than 40 years to get to that gap. Particularly, even if you look at the slow pace of outcomes that the one learner, one estate agent program is doing. So you've got a conundrum now that despite the program that we have been the panacea of trying to tackle this real issue that reflects the history of this country, where it comes from in terms of not only social cohesion, but of opening up economic opportunities, that there's not going to be any change, a significant shift, to use that word, because those statistics don't, for me, they don't inspire hope at all. And it is not to downplay the efforts that have been made. I'm saying despite the efforts that are being made, the system itself is not producing the outcomes that it was created for. So what are you doing about it? Because if you continue at this stage, there'll be 5 more terms of parliamentarians, Chair, and the picture will still be the same. And it will be indictment on every sector that is responsible and available at this stage in trying to find how do you best accelerate those outcomes without manufacturing a process. But as the picture is currently, it leaves me very despondent, Chair. And secondly, I mean, moving on to the issue of the financial performance and filling the gaps in the finance department, I just want to get the correct understanding with regards to the switch from using Dubai auditors to the AG, because we didn't quite get what the actual reasons for. Was, did that contract lapse, or was it terminated? What is the status? Because I understand why it is important to do the switch, but I don't know what were the reasons for the switch. and those weren't shared with us. And lastly, Chair, with regards to CISOs. So, as I understand from the presentation, we initiated this court process to recoup the money that was lent, and there was just a pedestrian mention that, you know, for the non-compliance with the Treasury regulations, for the wrongful deposit, there will be consequence management. What is the status with that? So, what action has been initiated against who? And without getting into the merits of it, if it is underway, I think it will give the committee confidence if there is an indication of this is what has been initiated in enforcing those consequence management, so that once again we have the assurance that where wrongful conduct has taken place, corrective steps are being taken, and we can then have trust in the process that will go forward. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank
you, Chairperson. But most of my question has been covered by the members. But only one thing that I want to point out, because you know that the transformation is not a event in the process. But my concern is the slow pace of transformation, which is the same in EAAP. Now what I want to find out, because they cannot have a time frame, but in their operations, what they envisage that they have in their thinking about the transformation process. So it is very slow. And the other one, Chairperson, is the one of I'm worried about that thing of investing to VGA, that 81 million. What I want to find out, the investigation, how far with the investigation of those officials who were involved in the VGA. And the last one, Chairperson, under audit opinion, the correct number 4, trade and other payments, unallocated funds, if they can actually answer that one. Thank you very much.
Honorable panel.
Chair, thank you very much, and thanks for the two reports. Chair, I think I'll represent Mr. Malati, because my questions are the same as Mr. Malati, because it's not here, I'll take your answer from the two presentation, but I'm concerned about the transformation agenda in terms of the AAB. If you can just speed up its transformation. Lastly, Chair, I always worry in terms of this advertisement and the one learner, one state agency. And I don't see it in my own constituency, because I'm from the rural. And I don't see the rural people taking on both of these issues. Can I find, if you advertise which newspapers of the media that you use, so that our people must be some part of really taking part in those things. Also, your consumer awareness. Why does it happen? I only saw it in the TV. I wonder if it's there on the ground at the rural area, so that it must actually be part of that.
You mean you want to see it in Fairly Moon Store?
Yes.
Okay. The way you
have it. From the rural, I'm part of that town.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Honorable Kwarai. Honorable Ngatume.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first thank all the two presentations, and also congratulate the newly elected members of the board from the two entities. Okay.
And the new CEO.
Thank you so much. And then, Chair, my question will be, I want to take them back on the agreement that was made in 2016 of the partnership between the EAB and the South African Graduate Development Agency, that 3,000 estate agents will be accepted in the service sector program. If maybe they can tell us the progress to date, and if there are challenges, they must explain to us, and how are those challenges being resolved. The second question is on the last year financial year report that was not submitted in time. If you can tell us the challenges that you had, what made you not to submit in time? And then the third one, can you explain to us what happened to those state agents that have not complied? Maybe you can make a breakdown per province, those that have not complied and those that managed to comply. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Government and Honorable Member. Let's start with EAB just quickly. When we started this term, EAB, I know the CEO is new, but I just want to have an appreciation of what we are dealing with here as the Group Portfolio Committee, as we did office. There was a presentation that was made which said you will have about 10,000 new estate agents that will come out of your training, including the one left. But we all know that this program has failed. And it has not even produced half of that. We know that. But that speaks to what the members have been raising around the issues of transformation. And if everything else fails in EAB, we would be the happiest at this point if at least we can go out of this parliament knowing that EAB is committed in tackling the issues of transformation and saying we will turn these things around in this time. When you look in your presentation around the issues of registration, it becomes crystal clear, as members were saying, that we are very far from turning things around in issues of transformation. Now, as we were going around, one of the things that we did when we were dealing with your bill, which is the property practitioner's bill, that's why we had asked the drafters to actually go back and put a chapter on transformation, because we picked up that this is one of the big issues that as an entity you must deal with. But secondly, if you understand what you are trying to do and us are trying to push you to do, is that when you are able to tackle this issue, you will be helping the country in issues of jobs, which is a problem, in issues of young people, empowering them in this country, which is right now sitting close to 30%, in issues of transforming the economy. Because once you are able to deal with issues of transformation on this issue of real estate, you are able to assist the country. And I just want the EAAP to understand the gravity of the work that they are actually dealing with. And I think sometimes you don't appreciate what you have to do. And I'm raising this because I want Mam Dube, as the new CEO, even if she fails on everything else, at the end of your term, if you can turn this thing around, you would have done well. So we really want to implore you, if you can concentrate on transformation in EAB, it would actually help us, even if some of us would not be in this sector anymore, but we would be able to look and say, we actually played a role in transforming that thing, if you can help us. It is not transformed. It is not moving. And
we have tried, we have discussed, but the reality is that it is not yielding. Of course, remember, for EAAB to be able to do that, it talks to the overall country transforming, because what is the picture you see in EAAB reflects the picture of the country. So we need to understand that. So when you do that, and you do that well, you are actually assisting the country to actually transform. So just understand that and be able to grasp it and do it to the best of your ability. Now, the second part is that the issue of complaints and inspections, I want to raise it to you that this is one area as well that was raised when we were doing the round. And I hear what Jimmy says, that they are not doing it because of the previous verdict that was there in terms of not being able to. And it makes sense, but I'm just saying it also speaks to what transgressions are happening in the sector, and the sooner we are able to deal with it, once the bill is out, I know that once the bill is out, it will assist you guys to deal with this thing, but it will also deal with what is happening in the sector, because the reality is that whether we like it or not, the principal estate agents out there, 80% of them are the previously advantaged. We can't run away from that. We are not doing much in making sure that we have principal estate agents that are coming from the previously disadvantaged. That's why when you talk about the SFC, that's exactly what is a big issue when we're doing the hearing, because one of the big issues that came from previously disadvantaged people was the fact that you sit, you apply for this UFFC now, it will come towards the end of the year that you have to apply for it again. That's why the bill had to look at that and deal with it. And I'm quite impressed, Mam, with the fact that the turnaround has improved. And my question is, what was happening? Why so quickly, within a month that you are there, you are able to turn it around? Who was not doing his job? Because this has been one of the big problems in EAAB, the issue of people not receiving their SFCs. And for me, now, five-day turnaround, we are able to meet it. 21 days, we are able to deal with it. But why? Because this is what we have been dealing with it. All of us, this is us, this has been a big issue. So somehow, it's just about consequent management in AAB that was not being adhered to. And for me, whilst you appreciate your presence there, let you not drop the ball, but these things go back to where they were. Because this has been the big issue around the entity. I wanted to comment on those things, and I'm quite happy with the fact that the critical posts will be filled and everything else. I think from where we are sitting, it is something that will comfort us to know that EAAB is turning the corner, is doing well, because, as I have said before, it's one of the most important entities in human settlement. And if it can do its work right, it can actually make the department to shine, because the bulk of transformation is sitting with your person. Now, when it comes to CISOS, we just want to appreciate CISOS, the work that we have done up to now. I'm happy to hear that the 80 million is traceable. That's a big word. We were traceable, you know. So we would want to, even if the parliament is closed, to actually read somewhere in the report that it was traced. Now it's traceable, so it was traced and brought back to the source. You know what I mean? But also, I think members have raised this issue that the 59% vacancy rate is big, a big number. I think we are a bit ambitious when you say they will be filled by 31st of March. We won't be able to ask you the question because we won't be here when you don't fill those posts by the 31st of March. But I think that's a bit ambitious to say you will fill all 18 posts by the 31st of March. I think what I'm trying to say is that when you put in, you must be able to put things that you can do, not things that you wish that will happen by the 31st of March. But also, I see the department has made a commitment that they will second officials to CISOT in the meantime, which is interesting. If you're going to fill the post by 31st of March, why do you need people to substitute the second? Mm-hmm. You understand? But the DG will speak to that, and then we will close that up. But also, remember the last time you came to present to us, not the last time that was a bit not nice, the one before not being nice. You made, there was a commitment that was said, you are having a discussion, this is now a year old, you are having a discussion with SARS to actually assist you guys in actually making sure that you collect and you are able to collect equally. But now, the presentation says, we hope to conclude, to have that discussion with SARS by 31st of March. The key date now, 31st of March. You've been doing this for a year and more, talking to SARS, so that there is commitment between the two ministries. Now, is it realistic for you to say it will be done by 31st of March when we have been getting this report? Even when we went to visit you in January in your entity, this was told to us in January 2018, we are talking with SARS. Now, here you are saying 31st of March it will be done. Really? So, please, if we can then have those responses. It's not much of questions. I think it's mainly comments. So what we will then do, let me allow DG first to allow the EAB to come in, and then allow CISOS to come in, and then allow the department, and then we conclude if you allow it. Not unless there's something you want to say before they come in. Okay. EAB?
Thank you, Chair, and members. I will deal with the question of the auditors, seeing that that is a board responsibility. Honourable Member, when the board came into office, we inherited a set of annual financial statements that described our systems as perfect. However, the industry was telling us otherwise in terms of our system. And we commissioned two sets of assessments. One, an audit of what was obvious to us is a problem area, the suspense account. We don't normally have a suspense account such as we've had historically and then be told that your systems are perfect. That was the one. The second one was an audit of our IT system. And both of those resulted in findings that pointed to glaring problems within both our finance and IT space. What that did was that it did lead to a deterioration of our relationship with our auditors. There is a risk in auditing called self-audit, where you audit in relation to your past audit or in defense of your past audit. And we were saying that what has been presented to the board preceding us is not an accurate reflection of what we are seeing in terms of the system. So part of what we were dealing with was a broken down relationship with our auditors that was playing out. We made a recommendation arising out of the Audit and Risk Committee that we were not happy with the services that were being provided, and we initiated then a discharge of the auditor, which is the process that DG was referring to earlier, which couldn't happen timeously. And that was the background to that. And then maybe just in appreciation of the concerns of the members, it is true that the statistics that we see here around transformation are of concern. And I do think, Chair, that perhaps there was an oversell of the One Learner, One Agency program. I think we must be frank about that. The initial numbers of 10,000, we immediately came in and said, this is unachievable. Cut them down to realistic numbers. Let's talk about 2,000, 3,000 and target that, and then we will grow those. But one of the challenges that is evident, or lessons that is evident, is that even when you are successful in getting the young learners onto the program, because they don't see prospects down the line, they don't stay on the program. So it became apparent that we have to look at this and the full spectrum of intervention. So earlier I referred to two other elements that are before the board. One is what we call a rehabilitation and regularization program, recognizing that there are in fact many entities or agents who are historically disadvantaged persons who are sitting on the wrong side of the law, and we have to do something to bring them onto the right side of the law. That's a matter that is still being debated by the board, but I made reference to a similar exercise, for instance, done by SARS around tax compliance. It is along that model. The second component is what we call principalization and incubation, because one of the things that seems to burden agents and agencies that are black is this issue of getting mandates. Now, if you take two examples, one is in the Department of Public Service, something like 250,000 pre-approved government employees who qualify for a bond. They are looking for houses, and there is a mismatch between their demands and their capacity to find houses in the market. And one set of conversations is to see how we would then take agents that are in our incubation program and plug them onto that kind of opportunity. Another example is the Department of Public Works that has got about 10,000 leases that need to be renewed. And those are things that we would then also watch through our incubation program to create an offtake for those entities. So those are the elements that are before the board, which should be concluded by our meeting of March that we have, and hopefully bring about a much broader intervention around transformation. And lastly, Chair, we appreciate the set of sharp teeth that are going to be granted to this institution by the new legislation. As you know, we are operating on the basis of an archaic legislation, and we have to navigate around interest groups and a very tight political space. But the new legislation gives us not geared to deal with this matter unapologetically.
No, I was just remember. Okay. Thank you very much. I think I on the issue of transformation, I've heard the members loud and clear, and it is something that is receiving my immediate attention. But there's just one issue that I just wanted to clarify, because the members asked a direct question in relation to the One Learner program and the commitments we've made that we will obviously try and catch up in the last month of the financial year. Chair, I'd like to say that I believe it is doable. I know that our shortfall is 1,610 individuals, but I believe that the unemployment rate in this country is very high. So it will not be impossible for us to find those particular individuals. And the plan is that we will be going to the furthest corners of this country to find individuals. And let me explain to you how we intend on doing that. We are not going to just advertise in the national newspapers. We're going to also go to the local newspapers in the different languages, the different official languages, to make sure we advertise in those newspapers. And we intend on advertising in those newspapers this very coming weekend, the weekend of the 2nd and the 3rd of March. 2nd and the 3rd of March. Then we expect that the closing date would be on the 7th of March. Then we will have set aside an entire week for interviews to make sure that we get as many people in as possible from the different provinces. And the dates that we set aside for the interviews is the 8th, the 9th, the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th. Then we expect to then have appointments by the 22nd of March. The only challenge that could possibly come to the fore is if CETA does not come forth with regard to the commitments, because I've been at great pains for the past 2 weeks to try and get hold of the CEO of CETA so that we get the full commitment from CETA that the money will then be made available and it will be committed in this financial year, even though they will start their period that will overlap into the next financial year, but the commitment will be made this financial year and then they will be paid. And I don't think we'll have any problem with regard to speaking to the different agents in order to place them, because that is also a concurrent process that will take place as we undertake the recruitment. But I don't think that will be a problem, because they have been waiting and they know of the figures and they've been ready. The only thing is to just then identify the individual, place them, and make sure that they are paid the stipend that's set aside. And then with regard to all the other issues that the chair has spoken to around how then we make sure that people don't just come in for 12 months and then they're gone, how they're sustained in the market, issues of incubation, we are formalizing the business plan with regard to how we'll deal with the incubation, and we'll present it to the board, and I believe that then we will have a clear strategy when we come at the next meeting.
Thank you very much. One word, sir. Because you are really
okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Chairperson. And good afternoon, honorable members. Good afternoon, DG. You know, I just want to paraphrase your question as a committee. Your question, if I were to paraphrase it, is simple. Why so many white people in the industry as opposed to black people? And let me be honest and be frank. I hear the chairperson of the committee, you know, is encouraging the new CEO that she needs to focus, and at the end of 5 years, she needs to deliver. I can assure you that is going to be impossible. I've been with this industry since 2002. The reason we have been grinding to transform this industry, it is because we, as the new dispensation, we have made it very difficult for our people to come in since 2008, when we decided to professionalize at a very high level, at first world level, this industry. Lastly, Chairperson, I joined the industry in 2002. It would take 3 months for an individual to become a full status agent and a principal. In our new dispensation, to be a full agent, it takes 3 years and it costs about 50,000 rand. And to be a principal, it takes 5 years. That's why it's not going, the economies of scale is not the same. Our people don't have money. It's so easy, it's difficult for any new entrant now to join the industry. Worse if you come from the previously disadvantaged community. Thank you.
Thank you, Putin. Did you read the chapter on transformation on the new page?
Yes, sir.
You are not to
yes,
okay. Let's go to Sipa. No, no. This is not your meeting. There are two entities here. What we will do, we will come back to you once we have given Sipa's also enough time that we've given. Let's go to Sipa.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the filling of the position, the reason why we're saying we're going to be back, the position has already been advertised, we've already shortlisted, so we'll be commencing with the interviews in the coming weeks. So that is good. With regard to the consequence management, the charge sheet has been finalized. We're just packaging the supporting documentation that will go with the charge sheet so that we commence with the disciplinary process. The investigation, it was completed in and tabled at board last year, December. So the charges are emanating from that investigation that has been done. In terms of the unallocated funds, this relates to the fact that most of the scheme or some of the scheme, when they make payments, they don't put in the reference number. So in terms of the pay payment, you need to be able to identify where you receive the money from. If it is from scheme A, you need to say, what we have done in that regard, we have published a practice directive on our website to tell step by step to all the team owners, this is how you make payments. Because we've not only done that, we went on road shows last year between September and October just to educate all the schemes in terms of how they process payments, how they put in the correct number, so that you are able to identify from which scheme the payment is coming from. So we are thinking that will reduce in terms of the unallocated funds that are in our books. In terms of the funds discussion, Chair, if you remember, initially the discussion was the funds to assist us with the system. We went to them, they told us that due to the e-filing issues, we must put that discussion on hold. The ones that were pursued is the exchange of information. So that's why there's this thing of delay in terms of the funds issue. And obviously, with that answer from FAR, we decided then we might as well procure our own revenue management system in the coming financial year. I think the issue of the secondment, I'll leave that to the
Chair. Okay. Chairperson, your last words, your friend?
The 80 million, Chair, is actually there's no say we will, but we were worried before than now. That's the sense of that.
I hear you. Thank you so much. I'm coming to the department now because this course has saved me. You can come later.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to respond to the question that the Honourable Member asked regarding submission, late submission. One of the main reasons was actually the late start of the audit. Because of the discharge of the external auditors that was not approved, and we now had to re-engage them. And one of the important roles by the board is to ensure that we assess independence as well as objectivity. And we had to put in safeguards to address some of the risks that the board had put in place. So the late start of the audit mainly contributed to this, as well as other issues that the CEO had indicated that there are measures that have been put in place for this year that there won't be a repeat. Some of those are regarding the ERP system, as well as the internal challenges that we've with the CFO, which is key. Thank you.
A simple letter from your friends to the portfolio committee could have actually solved a lot of problems. As all that. So the fact that we decided that you understand it yourself, and therefore we don't need to understand what you are going through, actually put the entire entity into unnecessary stress. Department? Maybe before this you come in, Mr. Chungongo, do you want to say anything around your entity?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I will say in terms of the department, we appreciate the constructive criticism and the marching orders from this committee. And also we get encouraged where there are positive remarks on the improvements that have been done, that have been realized in both entities. I must indicate to the committee that we are working together with both entities. And in terms of their strategy that they have implemented, we will also be monitoring the implementation thereof. And also in terms of our oversight over the department, we will also be making sure that we focus on the governance and compliance because it seems to be the recurring issues in all our entities. And thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Yes, did you?
Yes, thank you, Chair. First of all, Chair, I understand clearly where Honourable Malatsi and Honourable O'Reilly are coming from in terms of the transformation figures. In fact, if you read those figures, they are very depressing, especially the figure on interns, because if you have a program that you call One Learner, One Estate Agent, which is intended to bring new people into the picture, and that figure is reflecting the number of young black people, then you have a figure on interns. If you go back and look at that figure on interns, that the estate agents are employed is predominantly white. So the organization is indicating left, the estate agents are turning right. So you can see clearly that there is no alignment when it comes to transformation, because if you're using one learner, one estate agent to bring young black people into the picture, the agents are recruiting young white males and white females. So which is why Honorable Kurai and Honorable Malati are depressed, because it simply means that there is no hope, there is no future. Even if you consider the number of young people who are being trained in the industry, it's not your black young people who want to be practitioners in the industry. I think that's the area that we need to arrest. Which is why, Chair, you're raising this point about Chapter 4, and you're asking a specific question if the board member has read Chapter 4 of the Property Practitioners Bill, because Chapter 4 is not only talking about transformation, it's also talking about
the creation of the transformation fund, because you have to fund that transformation. It's not going to happen automatically. So chapter 4 talks about funding the transformation, because it's not going to happen automatically. So let's familiarize ourselves with the chapter 4 of the property practitioner's bill. And then, Chair, coming to CISOs, I must be honest, Chair, with you, that I wrote to the acting chief ombuds in November last year, and I asked them not to fill the positions that were advertised. And I thought that it would be fair for the outgoing body to make that critical decision on the filling of positions when there's going to be a new board in January. And I thought that you would want to give the new board an opportunity to fill those positions. If they wanted to fill those positions, they would have filled them by December. But I urged them, and I wrote to them, and I said, let's give the new board an opportunity to fill those positions, because you don't want the outgoing board to be filling those positions. So that's why she is very positive that the positions will be filled before the end of March. They were advertised in October last year. They have gone through the shortlisting process, but I was not very comfortable with an outgoing board making those strategic decisions. So I asked them. I don't have any right in law to do that, Chair, but I decided to do it, and I urged them. I wasn't instructing them. The second part, Chair, which I think is very important, I'm sure the CEOs of the entities will have to meet at some point and discuss it, is this area of ICT. Because NHPRC is sitting on a SAP platform. They're using SAP-related system. HDA is sitting on a SAP system, and they're using SAP-related system. SHRA is sitting on a SAP platform, and they're using SAP-related systems, if you like. And you have CISOs as well. They're sitting on a SAP platform, and they're using a SAP-related system. And I asked the CFO a while ago, together with the head of IT in the department, to arrange a meeting with all the CEOs and see if we can do a cost-sharing arrangement. Because it's cheaper if you have four entities that are all using the same ICT, and we are a shareholder, if there's only one shareholder. And why can't we do a cost-sharing arrangement? It's only the department that is using a Microsoft Oracle-related platform. And those are the things that we are discussing at strategic level. Is there a way that we can share the cost? I mean, some of the entities are doing very well. For instance, NHPRC, they can fund the bulk of what we want to do. So we can get into a cost-sharing arrangement. Maybe the chairman of these entities as well must drink coffee together and see if we can do a cost-sharing arrangement. It's not just the CEOs. We can discuss this. Because you have NHPRC, you have HDA, you have SHRA, you have EAAB, and CISOs, all of them, they're sharing the same ICT platform. But when they go out on tender, they go out as individual entities. I think we need to find a mechanism to share the cost. And that's perhaps one thing that I have to discuss with the CEOs of the four entities. The last comment on my side, Chair, is that the CFO has already started helping CISOs. She's spending some time and some hours there with the acting chief ombuds. What we've proposed to the minister, which I'll be discussing with the minister after this meeting, is to get one of the finance directors from NHFC. Remember, NHFC, Ralph, and Nature are now one operating entity. So which means that we have three finance departments that have come together. So we can release some of the finance directors to assist both, by the way, they can assist EAB and they can assist CISOs. Because for all intents and purposes, the NHFC, Ralph, and Nature are one entity now. Remember, the Minister of Finance has granted us Section 66 approval in the 1st of October, 2018, to move all the assets and liabilities from Nature and from Ralph into NHFC. So we prepared a submission, which I'm going to discuss with the minister after this meeting, to see if we can second one of the finance officials from NHFC to assist the two entities. In fact, we have three finance directors. We have three CFOs. They are all now serving one entity under NHFC. So we could release one or two of them to go and assist these organizations, because the audit year will start soon. We want, when the auditor comes in May, we all want the finance and the audit departments to be up and running, to be functioning. And that's why we're pushing this matter of seconding from within, because if you get someone from outside, it's going to take a little bit of time. Even if you advertise to get some audit specialists, it may take a little bit of time. I'm happy that EAB has already started that process. Maybe we don't have to focus too much on EAB, because they've already, I think, hired some people to assist to stabilize their finances. I'm worried about this, and that's why we're recommending that at least we must get three or two finance people or audit specialists to assist the acting chief on this. I will leave it there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much to the two entities. And I'm hoping that the fact that you've been able to listen to each other's presentation, there's something that you've learned from each other. And I think one area that is critical for me, particularly what the support says, is the fact that board members not get too much involved on operational issues, because that's what actually made some of them. And I think it's something that you can learn from and see yourself that it doesn't happen, so that you don't get yourself in situations like this. But that's neither here nor there. But I think the important thing is to be able to learn from each other. From me and the members of the portfolio committee, this would be the last time that we see you, the two entities, in this fifth parliament. By the time you called back to come and account to parliament, it will be on the sixth parliament. So we wish you the best, and we really hope that our interactions with yourself have enhanced your working and how we then manage those entities. We really also hope that even if we were harsh at times with yourself, it was only for the good of the South Africans. And we hope that you take it to heart,
yes,
and take it and understand that it was not personal at all costs. We wish you the best, and really, from our side, as we go out and we will be campaigning in our individual parties, Honorable Tone, in our individual parties. We just also know that when the fifth parliament resumes, Honorable Tone, it will still be the majority party sitting here. But all the best in the campaign. But thank you very much, both entities. It was good.
Can I press this button on top?
Enjoy, you know, in the country. We're done with the